Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, Michael Parenti is back, speaking ad lib on capitalism, socialism, the electric company, money, plutocrats in general, the Waltons in particular, and other pains in the neck. I hope you'll stay tuned. It seems that so many of our important progressive intellectuals are now quite old or, worse, recently deceased. In recent years, we lost that patrician, good guy, novelist and essayist Gore Vidal, and we lost the progressive historian Howard Zinn. We lost some good lesser lights, too. Journalist Molly Ivins and folk singer-storyteller Utah Phillips, for example. Still with us, fortunately, are two certifiable really old guys, Noam Chomsky and Michael Parenti. Intellectuals, scholars, professors, activists, and great public speakers with a big public following, both of them. Noam Chomsky's birthday is right around the corner, December 7. He was born in 1928 on Pearl Harbor Day, 13 years before it was Pearl Harbor Day. If you wanted to send him a card saying happy birthday and thanks, probably you could address it to the Department of Linguistics, MIT, Cambridge, Mass. His old office. I'm sure they've got his forwarding address. Yes, Department of Linguistics. Chomsky was a great figure in the field of academic linguistics before he became a great analyst and critic of contemporary politics and world affairs. Happy birthday, Noam. Neither I nor Wikipedia knows political scientist Michael Parenti's exact birthday. But it was in 1933, and he is 82 as I speak. And it is to Parenti that we now turn. On October 6, 2015, he was in fine form in the question and answer session following a good speech he gave in Springfield, Illinois. The speech was titled Capitalism Versus Reality, and we shall hear it, I expect, sometime soon. Today, though, more of the Q&A, and then afterwards, a very brief Parenti recording or two from a decade or so ago. In the Q&A, the discussion continues of the merits and problems of capitalism, and the merits and problems of socialism. Spoiler alert! Socialism comes out ahead, in Parenti's view. Here's the first topic today. Springfield, Illinois, apparently is served by a publicly owned electric power company. The ratepayers are not entirely pleased with the service and the prices of this public utility. Having a publicly owned power company is a form of socialism, isn't it? Well, one audience member thinks the local power company makes a pretty poor advertisement for socialism. Could a capitalist for-profit electric company be much worse than what they've got? Parenti replies, you betcha. Try living with Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, as he does back in Berkeley. This is a fun dialogue. And underneath it is a very interesting exploration of capitalism and its alternatives. Here's Michael Parenti.
You have a socialist enterprise as CWLP, a socialist program like Social Security, but exists within a capitalist system. And are these movements towards change, do they support the capitalist system?
Sure they do. What? You mean the public utility supports Well, I guess it might. It has to function in a capitalist system. But no, it's not supporting capitalism. Capitalism is when these lights go on and somebody is making money off the fact that these lights are on. Somebody who doesn't work with these lights, who doesn't work with anything we do, but something comes out of your pocket. If you're paying for this, if you're paying with your tuition some of the expenses of this university, you're paying for these lights. And the Koch brothers, maybe they're the guys involved in it, or David, the Koch brothers, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe David Rockefeller or somebody. Every time in New York, every time I put the light on, I was helping Nelson Rockefeller and David Rockefeller, making him richer. Why? What do these people have that they can get billions and billions of dollars? Walmart's, why must we... What did Walmart's ever invent? What did the Walton family? The Walton family, of the top 10 richest people in America, four of them are from the Walton family. Of the top 25, I think it's about six or seven altogether. Add up all their wealth, it's over $150 billion. Now, what did they do to get this kind of money? And whose money is that? It's our money. We got to pay it up. And they so underpay their workers that their workers have to go out and get food stamps. They're so underpaid that around Christmas time, they ask the public to come in and toss in cans of food and all for their own workers. They're shameless, these Walton family. They're shameless about it. And they get richer and richer. They got more money than they could spend in five lifetimes in the most freest way, wildest way. What is that about? This is a rational system. This is the way our people, we got people struggling and fighting, paying the Waltons for doing nothing and just riding on our backs. So that's why I think it's the public utilities. And the public utility can provide lights that are just as good as any other lights. They're not blinking out or flashing, are they?
Some of them are probably flashing.
But look, the public utility will pay a public salary to the president of it. That means he'll get, what, $100,000, $200,000. If it's a private utility, he'll get a private salary, and that'll be $5, $6, $10, $15 million. So that's one thing I don't like. What's so great about this guy? We got to give him $15 million salary? Why do they spend so much on public propaganda all the time, telling us what a great job they do, how selfless they are, how thoughtful they are? That's all I hear from PG&E, that they do nothing but love us and take care of us and all that. So meanwhile, he's got his hand in my pocket, on my wallet. So why wouldn't I oppose that? If some guy held you up on the street and grabbed your money, you'd be angry and furious as hell. You might even put your life at risk to want to pop him one and grab it back or something. But that's what these guys are doing. They're doing it in a system of shaking us down and stealing it from us. It's a form of theft. That's what capitalism is. It's a siphoning up to the top. Those who do less, profits are what you make when you're not working. If you're working, then, you know, people say to me, oh, yeah, you're against capitalism, but you get royalties on your books, don't you? Your book, I got you there. Huh? I said, look, Jerko, I wrote that book. I sweat and I wrote that book. I created that book. I worked for days and days and days, over a year writing that book. And the copy editor who went over it, he spent about 4 days copy editing that book. You know, he should get some kind of pay for it. And the editor too. And the salesman who goes out and sells it to the bookstore or to Amazon or whatever, they should get a cut. So don't tell me, I'm not freeloading. We work for it. The freeloader is the guy who owns the publishing company, Macmillan. Macmillan was, it was Harold Macmillan, you know. Mm-hmm. He owns St. Martin's Press. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there in my living room, and he comes on the air, Harold Macmillan. You don't remember him. He was Prime Minister of England, an old guy years ago, and he said, and Dick Cavett was interviewing him and said, so what do you do now that you're no longer Prime Minister? You're sort of retired. And he says, Well, the family has a little publishing house that does quite well. They made that little sound, you know, and I wanted to sit in there, and I was going, geez. And I wanted to really put my foot through my own television set. You know, that's how crazy you can get sometimes. And I said, he's the only guy who isn't, who isn't contributing anything. He's just skimming the top off. He can sit back and run for Prime Minister of England. The Macmillan family was getting rich on St. Martin's Press, which is still a pretty big press right now. They don't publish my books anymore.
Should I just try to repeat?
Yeah.
There's growing inequality. There's growing oppositions and class conflict of various kinds. What does Dr. Parenti see as where that might go? Is there might be some violence or revolutionary possibilities on the horizon? Is that right? You're interested in finding out where he thinks this might end up?
When it gets so utterly desperate with the French Revolution, you had the pitchforks come out. You know, Barack Obama himself made a comment to one of these big business groups where he said, you know, I'm the only thing between you and the pitchforks. I thought that was a fascinating statement. He was talking about 1798, the French Revolution, 1797, I forget. Yeah, but the French Revolution, you had two things, utter misery. People were utter misery. And two, their opponent wasn't that powerful anymore. Louis the 16th, who went to the guillotine. Mm-hmm. He didn't have, I mean, his own guards were wavering and turning against him. And you had another class coming along. It was that middle class, that bourgeoisie class. And you had leaders like Robespierre and these people. They were playing for keeps. What frightens me is I think we may end up worse than that with a populace that doesn't fight back, they're too thoroughly brainwashed. They've decided that this is all happening because people are being hostile toward Christianity or because women insist on getting abortions or something. You know, the development of false consciousness is much, much more clever than Marie Antoinette sitting there and saying, you have no food, let them eat cake, you know. And she was preparing her own guillotine. So that's the problem. I don't see it. And then sometimes you don't know, then you get surprised. You get utterly surprised. Look at those students who did go there. And you're right, they didn't say occupy the Pentagon. I made this point, I wrote somewhere. They didn't say occupy Pentagon, occupy White House, occupy Congress. No, they went to the heart of the creature, occupy Wall Street. They were saying who, and they put that right on the table. Then you got, you know, we didn't go anywhere with it. We didn't get enough organization out of it. And they got crushed. They all got crushed. But the one big gain they made was the propaganda gain of talking about 1% and 99%. Well, there are those of us who have been for years trying to talk about the great divide between the rich and such. When in a country where people think, oh, we're all middle class, there's a few poor down there, a few losers, you know, and there's a few super rich, but they're nothing. But we're in America, we're all middle class. Baloney, all middle class. And the middle class is fighting and struggling and is holding on like this, you know, if it's holding on at all. So I really don't know what the future has in store. And then there's the additional pressure. We may be running out of time. The French in 1790 never had this problem, but we are facing an ecology that is in a crisis of a kind that we've never seen. Well, these idiots, they're actually celebrating this, some of them. There are actually now corporations arising that are designed to help people take advantage of climate change, how they can make money on climate change. They're crazy, you know. Years ago, I said, these people are not going to come to their senses until the North Pole melts. That was my term, the North Pole, meaning the Arctic. Well, the Arctic is melting. It's now melting in my lifetime. I can't believe it. And what are they doing? They're getting up there saying, oh, isn't this good? We can have a Northwest Passage now. So Lewis and Clark wanted a Northwest Passage, right? In fact, Columbus himself wanted, was looking for a passage to get around there. And we can do this, and we'll be able to do that, and we can cut off. We don't have to go around Cape Horn anymore and all that. So that's crazy. They really are. And it's causing all sorts of ecological things. The Gulf Stream, the Caribbean Stream and all that. It's going to change tremendous, it's going to make tremendous changes of climates in the North American continent and even in Europe. It may be a disaster of momentous dimensions, and it may come in your lifetime. I don't know.
A questioner suggests that no real change in the American system can take place so long as we are caught up in the monetary system. Parenti disagrees, though. The main problem isn't with money itself, he thinks. The main problem is that not enough money goes to the people who earned it by their work, and too much money goes to the fat cats who just sit back and pocket the profits of other people's work. We return to Michael Parenti.
If you didn't have a monetary system, what would you use? I mean, in a complex society like this, we can't have a trading system or, you know. Well, people don't lose their intelligence. They don't lose their sense of self-interest and other interests. In fact, it gets better under socialism. Look at Mondragon, which is an anarchist. It's not socialist. It's mm-hmm. an anarchist organization in Spain. Mm-hmm. And they started with small, you know, making clocks. Just workers employing workers and nobody else. Workers working for themselves. And it's built up into a large society. Well, they gave a better salary to the top guys who had to stay there late at night and take on more responsibility than the worker. So they developed changes and such, but they weren't stealing from me. When I bought something made by the Mondragon cooperative workers, anarchist workers, every penny in that went to some guy or gal who earned it, who had been working in it. And so what the monetary system is not, it's a convenience, it's a way of doing it. Now, it's not true. Of course, money was invented with wealth. That is true. At a certain point, kings could not give 700 fur skins to somebody in a trade or swap camels or animals or whatever else, or gold plates or different gold cups and all that. So they invented coins and that became a way of accumulating wealth. It's an instrument of wealth accumulation. That's what's so wrong with a monetary system. But if you don't have kings and you don't have CEOs who are plundering your company and all that, I don't see where the money would be such a danger.
Thank you very much to all of you and to Dr. Michael Parenti.
Thank you.
I've got 90,000 pounds in my pyjamas. I've got 40,000 French francs in my fridge. I've got lots of lovely lira. Now the Deutsche Mark's getting dearer, and my dollar bills would buy the Brooklyn Bridge. There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash. There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing like a newly minted pound. Everyone must hanker for the butchness of a banker. It's accountancy that waits the world around. You can keep your Marxist ways, but it's only just a phase. For it's money, money, money makes the world go round.
Sorry about that. I couldn't resist. That was Monty Python's Flying Circus from way, way back. From back in the days when there were national currencies with names like pound and Deutschmark and lira and franc. Of course, the pound is still with us. The United Kingdom joined the EU, but never joined the European Monetary Union. so the UK still has some control over its own currency. Don't you wish, Athens? We'll turn now to a short studio recording Michael Parenti made in 2005. This 5-minute essay is called Welfare for the Wealthy. It's about how the federal government gives billions of your tax dollars each year to the big corporations, while doing very little for small business and still less for the citizens. Again, this was recorded in 2005, 3 years before Wall Street's fraud and irresponsible risk-taking crashed the national economy. Immediately after the crash, your government gave trillions of your dollars to the giant banks and financial firms, making sure that their investors did not lose a penny in the economic crash that they caused. The people, meanwhile, got unemployment, home foreclosures, and almost zero assistance from the government. Parenti was proved right with a vengeance. Small comfort there. From 2005, here is Michael Parenti on Welfare for the Wealthy.
Welfare for the Wealthy. Big business is fond of preaching the virtues of self-reliance and individual initiative. Big businessmen are fond of denouncing those who run to the government for handouts. But in fact, no interest feeds more lavishly out of the public trough than corporate America. Successive administrations have dedicated themselves to supporting the corporate system. They offer an array of subsidies and services to business. They impose a taxation system that shifts costs and diseconomies onto the general public, and they launch military spending programs that have transformed the United States into a permanent war economy. Rather than a laissez-faire government that does little, we have a corporate state that plays an increasingly active role in sustaining the process of capital accumulation for big corporations. The federal government leases or sells at a mere fraction of market value billions of dollars worth of oil, coal, and mineral reserves, and grazing and timber lands. In any given year, the government hands out billions to big business in tax exclusions, tax credits, price supports, loan guarantees, payments in kind, export subsidies, subsidized insurance rates, marketing services, irrigation and reclamation programs, and research and development grants. Billions from the U.S. taxpayer right into the pockets of the big rich corporations. The U.S. government permits public funds to remain on deposit in banks without collecting interest. It tolerates overcharging by firms with whom it does business, and it provides long-term credits, tariff protections, reduced tax assessments to large companies. Over $26 billion a year in federal crop subsidies benefit mostly big agribusiness and affluent farmers, with relatively little going to small producers. The federal government is losing up to $52 million a year by charging ranchers below-cost grazing rates on public lands. $97 billion in public subsidies has gone to the nuclear industry. Billions go for research and development straight into the corporate hands without the government collecting a penny in royalties. Mining companies extract valuable minerals and metals from public lands without paying royalties. One company mined a gold deposit in Nevada with an estimated value of over $7 billion without paying a royalty fee, and with the right, under the law, to purchase the land for $5 an acre. The U.S. Forest Service continues to open up national forests to timber companies at below the cost of running the program, for an average yearly government loss of many millions of dollars. The government directly subsidizes the railroad, airline, and shipping industries. It subsidizes exporters of iron, steel, textiles, tobacco, paper, and other products. Energy companies have received huge amounts in grants and tax incentives to encourage oil exploration. Billions of dollars go to bail out such giant companies as Chrysler and Lockheed, while small businesses are left to sink or swim. When one of the nation's largest banks, Continental Illinois, was on the brink of failure, it received $7.5 billion in federal aid. Another $8 billion went to the International Monetary Fund to offset the losses incurred by U.S. banks in bad loans to third world nations. No mom or pop business is bailed out when they go bankrupt or make a bad investment. These massive handouts supposedly are needed to create jobs, but big corporations create relatively few new jobs, no net gain in jobs after you count all their layoffs and downsizing. Almost all the new jobs in this economy are created from small and medium-sized business and from the growth in federal, state, and local governments. What these massive handouts do create is giant profits for the very few at the top. This is Michael Parenti for Radio Truth.
This commentary was produced by the LA Sound Posse and may be freely copied and distributed. You can find us on the web at lasoundposse.org. The music was Flute Medicine by Synth.
And that pretty much wraps it up for this week's New World Notes. The long Parenti recording was courtesy of the University of Illinois at Springfield, and also Dale Lehman of station WZRD in Chicago. I have edited and condensed the talk. Welfare for the Wealthy was courtesy of the LA Sound Posse. And our show comes to you courtesy of the spacious underground studios of WWUHFM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. On the web, find us at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Our show is produced by what is likely the smallest anarcho-syndicalist collective in all of Hartford County. The collective comprising me, myself, and yours truly, Kenneth Doust, chief cook and bottle washer, and corresponding secretary. On behalf of all of us, let me say thank you for listening. Illegitimi non carborundum. Workers, arise. What have you got to lose? Try to speak the truth, and please come back again next week. Ciao.